Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries daily worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Once more, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, business, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on quantitative easing right after this. You know, once in a while we get a glimpse of the real world through the eyes of an insider like John Swinton. Now, Swinton was the guest of honor at a banquet given him by the leaders of his craft, and someone who knew neither the press nor John Swinton offered a toast to the independent press. And Swinton totally outraged his colleagues by replying that there's no such thing at this date of world's history in America as an independent press. Now, you know it, and I know it. And there's not one of you who dares to write your honest opinions, and if you did, you know beforehand that it would never appear in print. Now, I'm paid weekly for keeping my honest opinion out of the paper that I'm connected with, and others of you are paid similar salaries for similar things, and any of you who would be so foolish as to write your honest opinions would be out on the streets looking for another job. And if I allowed my honest opinions to appear in one issue of my paper, before 24 hours, my occupation would be gone. Now, the business of the journalist is to destroy the truth, to lie outright, to pervert, to vilify, to fawn at the feet of mammon, and to sell his country and his race for his daily bread. Now, you know it, and I know it. And what folly is this toasting of an independent press? We are, he said, the tools and vassals of rich men behind the scenes. We're the jumping jacks. They pull the strings, and we dance. Our talents, our possibilities, and our lives are all the property of other men. We are intellectual prostitutes. Now, these rich men behind the scenes are the movers and shakers of this Global 2000 program, the New World Order. Men and families like the Windsors and Rockefellers and Bushes and Bundys and Carnegies and Vanderbilts. That's why I contend that it's time that we wise up and start listening more to the God of Abraham and stop following after all these crazy scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians. And let's prepare to live through and survive this New World Order and Global 2000 insanity. Now, if you'd like to learn more about Global 2000, Bible prophecy, and this New World Order, why don't you call and order our free 4-hour compact disc package first? That's the place to start. It's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative, and best of all, it's free. And you can call right now and order yours. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click onto the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there, georgegordon.org. Quantitative easing, that's a buzzword in Washington and indeed on the news every night. What it really means is inflation. What we're going to do is we're going to inflate the currency. Now, you can hang any label you want on it. It's kind of like adultery. You know, we don't want to ask the question straight out, would you like to commit adultery with me tonight? So we would dress it up by asking the question, well, do you want to fool around a little bit, or you want to go honky-tonking tonight, or you want to go dragging, or, you know, theft. We wouldn't want to suggest that we were thieves and that we were out stealing. We would say something like, well, I boosted that battery. Or for murder, you know, we wouldn't want to say, well, I went out and murdered this guy. We would use a term like, well, I offed him. And so it is with inflation. We don't want to come to you people and say, well, now we're going to inflate the currency over here and place this inflation tax upon you. So what we do is we come up with some word like quantitative easing. I guess maybe it makes us feel better when we off somebody rather than murder them, or we boost a battery rather than steal it, or we're out fooling around instead of committing adultery. I guess maybe that makes us feel better. I don't know. I kind of prefer straight language so that I understand exactly what it is you've got in mind. So when I see this quantitative easing, I see politicians lying to me. And that's all that boils down to. He's lying, which isn't surprising. Politicians are liars. They're paid professional liars. There's three professions in the world that are predicated upon lies: politicians, lawyers, and preachers. That's their business. They're liars. They're paid professional liars. That's what they get paid for. That's what we hire them for. Now, there's a fellow by the name of Jim Willie I wanted to introduce you here as we begin this story here of quantitative easing, because there's a number of authors out here, newsletter writers, that are telling us the straight skinny. They don't get listened to. Now, you're listening to Brian Williams, Katie Couric, and Diane Sawyer, but you're not listening to Jim Willie, Franklin Sanders, or Robert Chapman. So I thought, well, let's take a look at what's going on in the economy. What's actually going on out here, you know, in the real world of quantitative easing? How's this thing actually working out on Main Street? Well, Jim Willie, for instance, starts off like this. He says, you know, many observers to the wild gyrations, these deep contortions, these extreme measures, and the other bizarre activity in the government and banking arenas are suffering from severe, if not total, confusion. And the public is alarmed, maybe even frightened, by the sequence of events, without much benefit of a deeper comprehension of what's actually going on or which clans are really in control of government and banking. The degree of deception has hit a peak during the TARP fund creation and disbursement. That was all done behind private closed doors for the replenishment of revered preferred stock, that bridge between corporate bonds and stock equity. The deception hit a very high pitch with the financial titan failures. The entire string of these failures has continued ever since, and the economic data and promising forecasts that have been featured as green shoots or jobless recovery, and the totally vacant second half recovery that was promised in 2010 that's been trumpeted about every 6 months. Well, just what is happening is difficult to describe, especially to do it succinctly. But the main description reads like an obituary. And the most recent and the most visible distortion is not of price inflation, which has been running at 7% annually for the last 2 years, but rather the Institute of Supply Management, the ISM index. And it has somehow registered a slight increase from July to August, despite almost every single regional index, which has faltered and faltered badly. Just take a look at the careening Philly Fed from plus 5.1 to minus 7.7 in the latest month. If that isn't scary enough, then look at the Richmond Fed and the Empire Index, each down several points in 1 month, and they belie the weak components and the present, and they present a distorted aggregate, much like common practice with retail sales. So if you've been reading numbers in U.S. News and World Report or from your local newspaper, and they're talking to you about the jobless rate or about the unemployment rate, they're lying to you. What we're seeing here in the mainstream press are, and is, an aggregate of lies perpetrated by government to keep us from really knowing how bad this really is. It's bad, and it's getting worse. How bad is it? We don't want you to know. Recently, the Bloomberg people in New York, Bloomberg, that's a big newsletter writing establishment organization. Well, they went to the Fed and they said, hey, give us the numbers on these TARP loans. And tell us what's going on here. Who did you loan the money to? And how much did you loan, and how much have they paid back? And the Fed came back and said, oh, God, no, that's a state secret. You can't know that. Now, excuse me, boys and girls, you know, I'm just an old farm boy here, but excuse me, wasn't it agreed to up front that there was going to be transparency in that TARP program? I thought I heard something like transparency, and I interpreted that to mean that you were going to open the books and let us see what was going on. Well, not only haven't they done that, they said to Bloomberg News, they said, no, we're not going to tell you, it's a state secret. So Bloomberg sued under the Freedom of Information Act, and the suit's been going on now for about a year. Well, the district court judge told the Fed, open your books and show them the numbers, and then they refused. They took it to the Second Circuit Court of Appeals and said, hey, open your books and show us the numbers, and the Second Circuit said, yeah, open your books, show them, and they said, no, we won't, and so now they're getting ready to take it up to the U.S. Supreme Court. That would seem like a simple enough thing to me to simply come forward and say, well, we gave Bank of America $37 billion. And here's what Bank of America has done with the $37 billion. Here's how much they've paid back and so on. Now, let me give you a couple, three numbers here, boys and girls, because I've said this a couple of times and I wanted to point it out one more time. The TARP program was a little under $1 trillion. It was about three quarters of a trillion, spelled with a T. And that, along with a number of other loans and guarantees, totaled $12.8 trillion. And that's again with a T. Now, not all of that money was printed up in $20 bills and passed out to people. That $12.8 trillion included some things like guarantees. You know, for instance, remember AIG, the big insurance company? Well, they guaranteed that they would cover their debts. That's the taxpayers. That's our Congress now. They came in there and they said, hey, just put this on Joe Sixpack's credit card. And Joe Sixpack will guarantee all of AIG's debts. Well, the last time I saw a number, it was around $180 billion, and there's no end in sight, Joe, so keep your credit card handy, would you? And then there was Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae. The last time I saw some numbers on that one, between the two of them, it's around about $180 billion each, $360 billion. Now, not all this money is being passed out in $20 bills. Some of it's loan guarantees. And the guarantees are for the banks and the banking industry over here, who said, if you let us go upside down, we won't be here to loan you any money, Joe. So you better get your credit card out and you better finance us. You better bankroll us through this TARP program. Because if you don't, and this thing turns turtle, you're not going to have any place to turn to borrow money. So Joe said, well, okay, I'll do that. So we spent this $12.8 trillion. Now, it's worse than that. It's actually $28.1 trillion. $12.8 they admit to, and the rest of it over here is, so, well, these are guarantees, see. We haven't paid this money out. And that's true, they haven't paid it out yet. But the entirety of the housing market in America totaled $15 trillion. So take 15, or 15.8, I guess it was something like that, and you add that to the 12.8. So let's just see how much it is. If you had 28.1, and you put that into your calculator here, and then you want to take 12.8, which was done 12.8, at least 15.3. So the housing market in America, that's all the debt that the people had on their houses that was assumed by the federal government when they guaranteed this Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and FHA bailout, was 15.3. So you're on the hook for that. Now, not all that debt's bad. I'm not claiming that it is. Some of those people will actually pay some of that. But in theory, if nobody paid another dollar on their mortgage, then Joe, you and your credit card are going to pick up the whole 15.3, which totals 28.1 trillion. 12.8 trillion in direct cash subsidies plus loan guarantees. And just the housing market, which the other day I saw a number, and it was well over 90% of all the houses in America are now owned by the federal government. So if you got a mortgage on your house, which is guaranteed by Freddie Mac, FHA, or Fannie Mae, and then there's one other, I forgot the name of that one, then you, the American taxpayer, are guaranteeing that. Oh, and by the way, it's with joint and several liability, just in case you thought I was going to pay the bill. If I don't, you agree to pay all of it. Now, with that in mind, I mentioned this, and I'm going to mention it again. If the Congress, instead of giving the $12.8 trillion to the banks, if they had taken that same amount of money and just added another 2.5 trillion more dollars, they could have bought every mortgage in America. And you people in America would be 100% debt-free on your homes. Well, what the hell? You're guaranteeing it anyway. I mean, you might as well have got something for your money. The bank insists that when you borrow money from them, that it be collateralized. What kind of collateral did you get for your $28.1 trillion? You got zero collateral. You see, they had a bunch of these debt instruments that were worthless, which is why they went upside down to start with. You didn't even get those. The Federal Reserve got those. Those didn't go to the U.S. Treasury, all that bad paper. No, it went to the Federal Reserve. Now, if that's not insane and bizarre enough, if the federal government had taken the same amount of money and simply given it to the banks for the collateral, which was the mortgages on all of Americans' homes, you would either be, one, debt-free on your home, or two, in debt to the government. But the banks would be solvent because they got the $15.3 trillion, which is the reason why they said they were upside down, remember? Now, as it turned out, the banks got the $12.8 trillion, plus they got to keep all the mortgages, plus the government is guaranteeing all those mortgages now that the banks have kept. What in the hell sense does that make? And then you're going to pay all of your mortgage, and if they don't, they're going to take your house, and in addition to that, any mortgages that fail, you're going to guarantee those and pay those also? It reminded me of the president the other day. Somebody said that they thought the president was out of touch with reality. Well, the president flies around in his own private jet. It's not just an average run-of-the-mill private jet, and it's a 747. I didn't get the numbers on the 747, so I don't know how much gas it burns, and I don't know how much it costs to operate. But I know that it's several thousand dollars an hour. Several thousand dollars an hour. It's a $100 million machine to start with. Okay? It's got four great big motors out there that burn a lot of gas. Just the center gas tank in it, center gas tank, holds 6,000 gallons. 6,000 gallons, that's the amount of gas that goes into a truck and trailer. So when you're driving down the freeway and you pass one of these tanker trucks, you know, that's hauling gasoline or hauling something out, that's 6,000 gallons. That's what fits into the center fuel tank. That doesn't count the fuel tanks out on the wings. I don't know what the hell they hold. A bunch more, probably more than that. The president needed to take his wife to the opera in Chicago. He gets on the 747 with his wife, just the two of them, all along with their entourage of Secret Service agents and so on. They fly to Chicago. He takes her to the opera, and they get back on the plane, fly back home. Boys and girls, there's not a one of you listening to me right now that's going to make enough money this year to buy the fuel for that one trip. The other day, the president's wife took a vacation in Spain, and it cost $6,000 a night at the hotel, pretty pricey room. The good news was she was paying for all of that herself. It was done by private funds. Isn't that special? Now, she went over there with 30 Secret Service agents, and they all had to rent a room in the same hotel at $600 a night, so it's just a tenth as much. But let's multiply that out. That $600 times 30 agents, that's $18,000 a night. It costs three times as much to keep the Secret Service agents as it does the First Lady in the same hotel. She flew over there on a four-engine jet. It doesn't cost as much as a 747, but it's paid for by the taxpayers. Now, here we are with 10 million people unemployed, and the president is jet-setting to Chicago on a 747 with his wife to spend 3 hours at the opera, and his old lady goes over to Spain. She's blowing $6,000 a night, which is chicken feed compared to the total cost of what it's costing you and me to send the Secret Service over there to protect her and then fly her over and fly her back. So if somebody were to say to me, do you think the president's out of touch with reality? I'd say, absolutely. He's not concerned about paying the rent next month. You know, those of us that are unemployed, those of us that are out of a job, have to struggle with, how do I pay the landlord? What am I going to say to the landlord when I got to pay the rent? What do I do with the car payment on my unemployment check and so on down the line? So I just wanted to bring that to your attention, because I'm not sure that Katie Couric ever reports on things like this, but people like Jim Willey, Bob Chapman, and Franklin Sanders, and the Privateer. Here, I got a copy of The Privateer, which is put out by William A.M. Buckler down in Australia. And so every once in a while, I'll put on a series of programs, and I'll say, let's take a look at the economy and take a look at reality here, because we could have eliminated all housing debt in America for half as much money as we've spent already. And we didn't eliminate any of the housing debt. What we did was we took on $28.1 trillion worth of debt, and we haven't got a nickel's worth of collateral for it. Not a nickel's worth. And I'm sitting here saying, hey, I'm just an old country boy out here, but that doesn't make good business sense to me. I wouldn't do that. The banks won't do that. And now the banks won't lend to you. Remember the reason for bailing them out was so that they would lend to us? And they're not lending. Isn't that just special? So they took the money, turned them into federal bonds, and now they've got them on deposit, drawing interest on the bonds, and they ain't lending a dime to anybody. Somebody said the other day, the electorate out here is mad as hell. So what they're going to do is re-elect Team A. Hell, you had Team A in office under Bush, and you didn't like them. You wanted to change, so you put in Team B. All right, so now Team B is in there, and they're performing worse than Team A. So now you're going to replace Team B with Team A. Has anybody ever woke up to the fact that Team A and Team B are both working for the same people? And it sure as hell ain't for Joe Sixpack or Sally Housewife. So whoever they're working for, I just wanted to bring it to your attention. Not here to tell you what to do or how to vote. I just wanted to bring it to your attention. And Jim Willey is one of them. Now, this Jim Willey newsletter here, you'll find at thegoldenjackass.com. And I'm reading from the September 1st, 2010 edition. September 1st, 2010, if you go to the Golden Jackass, you'll find a number of articles that the guy has written over the years. That's so that you can look back at what he said in 2005, and then you can compare that with what's going on around you in 2010 and see whether this guy knew what he was talking about. And I did that, and I looked at his articles in 2005, and he said, now here's what's coming down the pike. Now I take a look at his September 2010 article, and I say, my God, that's exactly what happened. Not because this guy is that smart, not because this guy is a prophet and he's getting his instructions from God. That's not the case. It's a case of 2 and 2 equals 4. And if you spend more than you make, at some point in time, you're going to go bankrupt. That's all he said. You know, if we keep doing this, this is going to have an end result and it's going to be bad. And we continue doing it and here's the end result, and yes, it's bad. Now, there is a solution here for us little guys down here at the bottom of the pond. And as we progress along here, I'm going to point out some of these. Hey, why don't you think about yourself and be real selfish here in this? Forget about President Obama. He's doing fine. He's got employment for another 2 years. Don't worry about the congressmen out there. Those people have already stole more than enough to take care of themselves for the rest of their lives. So voting these guys out of office isn't going to be any skin off their backs one way or the other. They got plenty. You need to start thinking about yourself there, Joe. Joe, pay attention here. If you don't take care of yourself, you can rest assured your Congress and your president aren't going to. That's not their business in life. But they are going to take care of J.P. Morgan, Bank of America, and Goldman Sachs. Now, that's what we see here from thegoldenjackass.com. So I thought I'd throw that one in there. And that's my editorial opinion. Now, Willie goes on and he says, now, the U.S. banking sector died in September of 2008. And a corpse pumped up with blood does not rise up and walk. It has not acted like a credit distribution apparatus for the 2 years that it's been dead. And the U.S. Federal Reserve has served almost the complete function of the banking system, filling the gap with the decaying commercial paper market and perhaps 90% of the entire mortgage market. Its several dozen liquidity facilities testify to its urgent need to act as banking system substitute, since the real portion long since passed through the morgue. The major 100 banks in the United States are without exception insolvent, and thus they do not lend. So the top 100, that's Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan, Bank of America, Citicorp, they're all bankrupt. Boys and girls, wake up and smell coffee. Now, the jobs that are created in America, about 65% of the people of America work for small businesses. That is, the businesses that hire or employ 100 workers or less. Okay? And then about 25% of the balance are employed by big business. That's General Motors, Chrysler, you know, companies like Ford that have 300,000 employees. And then government comes in and they hire 10%. So 10%, 25%, and 65%. Now, if we want an economic recovery and if we want hiring, government is out here hiring people just as fast as they can. And God love them. But Joe, every time the government hires somebody, you have to pay their salary. So not only are you struggling in a bad economy, but now every time the government hires somebody, you got to pay more tax or take on more debt to pay that guy's wages. Now here's big business. Big business is not hiring anybody. Big business is still aggressively laying people off and moving their facilities offshore. Have you paid attention to Whirlpool? There's a number of these companies that are still, right now today, laying off American workers and sending the work to Mexico or China or someplace else just as fast as they can. Which, you know, you can't blame them. I mean, I'm not deaf, dumb, and blind. I can see what's going on. There's a company in New York called Mott, M-O-T-T. It's a food processing company, and they turn out applesauce. Well, they're union employees in their New York facility, 300 employees. Their union contract expired, and they're making $20 an hour. And so the Mott company said, well, now that your contract is expired, and we're paying you people on average $20 an hour, and here in this local area, we can hire people every day of the week. For instance, they showed an example of a forklift operator getting paid $20 an hour under the union contract. Said we can hire a non-union forklift driver with the average wage in the area, same geographical area, of $9.89 an hour, about $10, half as much. $9.89, that's half as much. Now, the union people, they said, no way, Jose, are we going to take a cut of a buck and a half, which is what the company proposed. We're not going to pay you $20, we're going to pay you $18.50. And the union said, no way, Jose, and they went out on strike. So the company turned around and they hired all scabs, 300 scabs, brought them in and replaced all these people's jobs. See, once the contract expires, well now, all the union employees now are free agents. And I don't know what the average Joe Sixpack wage earner was thinking there at the union, but it would seem like to me that if you're living in an area where the average wage is $10 an hour and you're getting 20, and the company says, I think you better take a buck and a half an hour cut, and the union says, no, we won't do that, and then they all get canned, and then they're replaced by the guys that are unemployed. 10% of the American workforce, boys and girls, is unemployed. That's what they admit to. The truth of the matter is it's 28%. 28. If we just count U6, it's 22. I mean, come on. Depends on what numbers you want to use and where you get them from. But the unemployment rate is way over 10%. And then the union complained. They said, well, the CEO is making $6 million a year. And that is crude. That's like Barack Obama taking a 747 to Chicago to entertain his wife for the evening. It is insensitive for the management of these companies with unemployment at 10% to raise their salaries right in front of everybody's eyeballs. The guy may be worth $6 million a year. I don't know. The stockholders and the board of directors and the people that hired the guy and paid him $6 million a year, they think he's worth that. And the guy that's driving a forklift says, well, I'm not claiming to be worth $6 million a year, but I'm claiming to be worth $20. Well, the CEO over here sold himself to the company for $6 million, and Joe Sixpack over here for $20 was unable to sell himself to the company for $18.50. So it would say to me, if there's workers out there that want to work for $10 an hour, I think they can do that. And they did. I mean, that's what marketplace economics is all about. I just wanted to bring it to your attention and show you a little reality here. Yeah, you got robber barons out there, but boys and girls, you got to wake up and smell the coffee. Your unemployment rate's at 28%. It's headed to 62. So you're going to have 62% unemployment here in the next year or two. So if you think things are bad today, you ain't got to the bottom line yet. That's why I thought we'd look at quantitative easing, also known as AKA inflation. Hang on, let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives, and all of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org, click onto the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there, georgegordon.org. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine, or mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are talking about quantitative easing. Now, quantitative easing means inflation. It's where your Federal Reserve Bank, the fifth plank to the Communist Manifesto, goes out and prints money. They just go out and print it up. And then they put it into circulation, buying up from the existing stream of goods and services, those things that government wants to buy, and then they send them over to Afghanistan and blow them up. And then they have you and I pay for that in higher prices, because this quantitative easing, this inflation over here, ultimately brings on price inflation. Now, price inflation is coming one of these days, and it's going to be bad. I mean, it's really going to be bad. I think hyperinflation would be a proper term. If I had to vote on deflation or inflation, I would vote for deflation, because in a deflated economy, money is hard to come by, just like for you people right now today. You're on unemployment, you're unemployed, money is hard to come by. But when you get money in your hand, you can exchange the money for the goods that are on the shelf down at Walmart. Hyperinflation is where you have all the money that you need in your pocket. You got lots of it, no shortage of money. But when you go down to Walmart, there are no goods on the shelf. And everybody is bidding the price of what is available. It's where you stand in line to share the shortage. It's what communism always produces, stand in line and share the shortage. I would rather have to go out and hustle up a buck and know that there's going to be something on the shelf when I get down to the store than to have somebody give me the money, and then when I get down to the store, I got to stand in line and share the shortage and find out that there's nothing there or that it's being rationed. You know, it's a choice that we have to make, and the choice has been made past tense, and inflation is the choice that we have made as a nation. So like I say, it's not me. Don't get mad at me. The decision's been made. Now that it's been made, okay. Okay, so we're going to have inflation, we're going to have hyperinflation, we're going to have shortages, we're going to have chaos, we're going to have rationing. So that's what you need to be preparing for, Joe. Now, you may sit there and say, well, I'm just mad as hell and I'm going to vote Team A back in. Well, okay, but once Team A gets in there, they've got the same problem and they're not going to make any changes. If you think that Team A is going to come back and say, you know, we've made a mistake, and what we need to do is to close down the Federal Reserve and go back to gold and silver coin and follow the Ten Commandment model of thou shalt not steal, and keep just weights and balances in our exchange. If you think that's going to happen, Joe, you need to check in at your local insane asylum. That isn't going to happen. the powers that be aren't going to allow it. They have worked hard to produce this monstrosity that we have. Now, there's something that you can do for yourself. There's something I can do for myself. But going out here and voting Team A back in place of Team B isn't going to solve that problem. It may give you some satisfaction throwing the bums out. No, I wouldn't deny that. You know, if that's going to make you happy, get after it. But when you get Team A back, you know, after next November, they'll come back into office next January. You still got the president up there to veto everything that's passed, and you ain't going to put in a veto-proof Congress now. That isn't going to happen. All right, so there's reality out here, and the reality is like this U.S. banking sector and the 100 major banks in the United States. They are, without exception, insolvent. Now, sure, it's true they boast a positive book value, but they can only do that after given permission to use phony FASB accounting rules. So they're using accounting rules, which is called marked to model. Now, that means that they set the value on the securities that they hold. There isn't any market out there that they put them into and sell them. It isn't a free market that determines prices. They're just setting the values themselves. That's what they did when they sold them to the Federal Reserve, and now the Federal Reserve is going to discount them down. They took them in at 100%, and they're going to discount them to 20. And then remember that guarantee, that $28.1 trillion, you're going to guarantee the difference. Yeah, I know, you're unemployed, but you're still guaranteeing the difference. I don't think that's good business. I don't even think it's good politics. But the average Joe Sixpack on the street, he can't comprehend these kinds of maneuvers. First of all, they're not reported to him in the mainstream press. And secondly, even if they were, he probably couldn't understand it anyway. It's too complex. But I suggest that you subscribe to one or more. You know, I don't say to people, you know, you need to subscribe to every newsletter out there. But, you know, if you would subscribe to two or three, I mean, if you shut off, you know, the papers that you're getting, like the New York Times and the USA Today and Newsweek and Time and so on, those guys are lying to you anyway. If you'd shut those off and then take the money and just buy one, you know, like the Golden Jackass or the Privateer or the International Forecaster or the World in Review, World Affairs Brief, Joel Skousen, World in Review, put out by John Chapman, so on. I mean, these are guys that are out there every month gleaning the numbers and then reporting to you, hey, wait a minute, these numbers don't add up. Government's lying to you. Let me give you an illustration about this unemployment thing over here. You start off with U1, then they got a thing called U2. This comes out of the Department of Labor. Then you got U3, then you got U4. That means unemployed group 1, group 2, group 3, 4. Then they got 5 and 6. Group 5 over here is the people that they're reporting to you. They're not reporting 1, 2, 3, 4, and 6. They're just reporting 5. And 5, last time I got a number, was 9.6%. And what that means is that of the number of people that are working in the workforce, compared with the number of people who are drawing unemployment checks every week, the answer is 9.6% of the workforce is unemployed. Now, after you've drawn your unemployment check now for 13 or 26 or 99 weeks, they drop you from the unemployment rolls. They drop you from U1, 2, 3, 4, and 6. They don't count you anymore. And that's why you've got an unemployment rate of 9.6. They're not telling you about 1, 2, 3, 4, and 6. Is it deceptive? I don't know. They're not lying to you. They're telling you the truth when they say the unemployment rate is 9.6%. And it's right. It's 9.6% of U5. And we're not telling you how many people under U1, U2, U3, U4, and U6 are unemployed. Now, U6 measures the number of people whose unemployment insurance has run out. They haven't found a job. And they're still unemployed. There is a number there, and government could count those people if they wanted to. But they don't, because they don't want to, because that would run the unemployment rate up to 13%. And I don't want to tell you, unemployment is 13% based upon U5 and U6. They just want to tell you about U5. And that's what they're doing. Now, there's another group of people out here. There are people that are working every day. And if you're working and you're making a dollar a week, you're employed. It may be true that you're underemployed, but by God, you're employed. And they're counting you as employed. So whether you're working 1 hour a week or 30 hours a week or 40 hours a week, that's employment. And that's U1. Now they've got U2, U3, and U4 in here also. And then I don't have right on top of my head, I can't tell you what those categories are. But when we add all six of those up, like we get from shadowstats.com, if you add all six of these up, and the way you do that is you go out and you poll people. And so they went out and they polled 1,580 people nationwide. And they just ask this question, is there anybody in your household that's looking for a job, looking for full-time employment? And the answer was 28, and a percentage, I think it was 28.1 or 3, percent of those people answered positively, yes, I'm looking for a job. Yes, my husband is looking for a job and my son is looking for a job. That's two or whatever. Now, if you were to call this household, we would answer, no, there's no one here looking for a job. Everybody here is fully employed. We got more work than we know what to do with. We can't handle it all. But when you ask 115 million households in the United States, are you looking for a job or is there somebody in your family looking for a job? The answer is 28.3% said, yeah, we are. They're either looking for full-time employment or they're underemployed or they're a college professor who is working 40 hours a week at Burger King. And while it's true, a college professor working 40 hours a week at Burger King is fully employed. Excuse me, that's not the employment that he's cut out for. He doesn't want to be a burger flipper at Burger King. He wants to be a college professor. And he can't find a job as a college professor. He can't find a job in the field that he's trained for. And now you've got millions of young people, I think it's 2 million a year, being graduated from college. They go into debt to get a college degree, which they were encouraged to do from the time they were in kindergarten, remember? And they said, you got to go to college, you got to go to college. And so the kid went to college, put himself in debt, $50,000 or $60,000. Now he's got a degree for which he can get no employment. That's unemployment, boys and girls. Now that's what's going on here. And now your government comes to you and says, what we need is more spending. We're going to go out here and spend more. Listen, this spending idea came from a guy named John Maynard Keynes. It didn't work in the 1930s. Tain't working now. It's never worked in history. Tain't never going to. It's a socialist communist philosophy. I don't even believe that the people that espouse the philosophy believe that it's true. The only people that believe in this are the people that went to college and have been taught this nonsense, and they believe it's true because they've never seen the alternative. So I just thought I'd point that out. Now, we're reading the GoldenJackass.com. GoldenJackass.com. Jim Willie, newsletter writer. All right. Going on, he says, they can declare their assets at any value they wish. In fact, on many debt securities, the banks actually declare unrealized losses as gains. Under this FASB accounting rules, they can take unrealized losses and call them gains. See the credit value adjustment scheme. It's a total travesty. It's a shameful practice, mocked by accounting professors. The Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation came out this week to announce the second quarter list of problem banks went from 775 to 829. It was 775 in the first quarter. In the second quarter, it's now up to 829. That's hardly any evidence of a recovery, boys and girls. The United States economy suffers from a credit strangulation since the banking system at the upper levels is dead. Simply stated, the banking system in America is dead. They're bankrupt. Now, there were other solutions to the problem. You know, we could have let them go upside down like Lehman Brothers. That means Goldman Sachs and Bank of America, let them all go upside down. And I think the better solution would be to go back to gold and silver coin. And then it would take us 36 months to recover from that. That's what it took from 1787 to 1790, after the collapse of the colonial monetary system in 1783. We've been through this before, children. Wake up. Smell the coffee. This is not the first recession or depression, and it isn't going to be the last. As long as we insist upon using unjust weights and measures, paper money, credit debt usury, as long as we insist on dealing in stocks and bonds and negotiable instruments and mortgages, we're going to have these recessions and depressions. It's an inevitable outcome of a policy that doesn't work. Never has worked in the past. Tain't working now. Tain't never going to work in the future. That doesn't mean we're going to give up on it. We're going to keep on with paper money. They're going to come out with a new color paper here pretty shortly. And we're going to buy it up and love it. But it won't work either. And then just changing the color of your paper doesn't work. Then they'll have to go to war. To keep everybody distracted and away from revolution, they got to go to war. And Iran is the place where they're talking about war. And the Iranians are tied in with the Russians and the Chinese. And how that's going to come out is anybody's guess. But my guess would be it's probably going to come out pretty poor. Because in the past, when you have blocks of nations versus another block of nation, and then one of them attacks somebody, it's what happened in World War I. You got Germany and Austria, which are allied together, and then some upstart goes over here and kills the king of Austria. That brings Germany in with the Austrians against the Yugoslavs, and then, you know, everybody gets into it. Pretty soon the French are into it, and then the English, and then the Americans, and, you know, it kind of grows as time progresses. And wars are immensely popular. Everybody loves war. Everybody. The only people opposed to war are the people getting killed. You know, the cannon fodder out there, they get tired of it after a while, but all the businesses are making money. The politicians are just doing hand-over business sales. The banks are just getting rich. And the people are working in defense industries and they're turning out tanks and airplanes like we did in World War II. And we love it. It's good for the Germans. It's good for the English. It's good for the Americans. It's good for the French. War is good for everybody. Everybody loves it. Well, war has its inevitable side effects also. And then pretty soon, when the death and the carnage and the destruction gets to be so great, like it did in Berlin and London and around the countryside, you know, in Tokyo and so on, pretty soon you have to drop a couple of atomic bombs, you know, on the Japanese. Even they got tired of war. But make up your mind, it's coming again. Now, a brisk U.S. Treasury carry trade has helped to replenish bank balance sheets, but the proceeds are locked at the U.S. Fed as excess reserves, hiding its gross insolvency. The U.S. Federal Reserve is thus the chief zombie bank. The more money the awkward, struggling leaders throw at the problem, the more the gold price will rise. Each quantum policy step lifts the potential gold price another $1,000 an ounce, which is great for all you people out there that are holding gold. But bear this in mind. Just because you're holding gold doesn't mean that you're going to have anything down at the store to buy with the gold that you've got. You see, in the last depression, we had a deflationary depression. Money had great value, and there were goods on the shelf to buy if you had money, which most people didn't have much money, but when you had money, it would buy something. But in an inflationary depression, oh my God, that's what happened in Germany in 1923. And that's what happened in America in 1783, and it drives all the goods off the shelves. And now you have to have rationing to share the shortage. Well, that's going to be something new for Americans. Share the shortage? Money? Lots of money, but money that won't buy anything? Well, that's going to be a rude awakening. All right, get this down now. This is Jim Willie from thegoldenjackass.com, September 1st, 2010. It's Gold and Investment in Failure, Jim Willie, CB. You can get it off the net. It's free. It didn't cost you anything. And he's going to be one of those authors that we're going to review here in Quantitative Easing Means Inflation, boys and girls. Hey, I'm out of time. I've got to give you a final reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review, and that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School or the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has a radio log schedule and archives, and all of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, time's up. I've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.